maybe
All right, let me get the rundowns real quick.
That was my fault, by the way.
Yes, it was.
That's fine. Are we started already?
I recorded. We're waiting on Johnny.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Panel Scanners. I'm your host, Johnny Capps. With me, as always, is Darren.
What evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
Unfair.
Cheater. And relatable antagonist, Phil.
I thought I was lovable. Ah. Oh. Hey, how's it going?
We are talking about comic books and geek news in general.
Which I need to jump in right away.
Go for
it. Matt Smith announced this week that he is no longer going to be the Doctor after the Christmas special this year. That means there are only two more episodes with Matt Smith. Two being the 50th anniversary and the Christmas special he's supposed to regenerate in, which means that he probably won't even get the full episode. Something bad is going to happen, and he'll have to regenerate, more than likely. I'm assuming it's going to be in relation to the end of this last season or the 50th anniversary, which I can't dive too far into because I know Darren is not completely caught up. But, I mean, that means that the internet is going crazy with all the different people that could possibly be the Doctor right now. But we're going to get into that here in a little bit, because...
Wait, there are Doctor Who fans on the internet?
There, what is this internet? Yeah, there oh, is quite a bit God. Going on out there.
Internets.
Internets? Nets. Interwebs?
Yeah, that's
Interwebs. That sounds about right. But but it just blows my mind.
I know that you have this list here of potential Doctors,
yeah,
which is pretty epic.
We'll get into it. It's kind of an odds game off of something from... That I actually looked at when David Tennant was announced to be backing down, and Matt Smith was at the top of that list. So I feel kind of good about the two guys that are on top, that there's a good chance that they could be the Doctor. But we'll get into that, as I said. I don't want to spend too much time on that, since it's all hearsay and it's not actual news.
No. In actual news, Heath Ledger's Joker Journal has turned up. And it is a documentary narrated by his father, Kim. It will be released on June 28th. And it talks about everything that he was going through mentally and physically while he was playing the Joker.
See, that's just going to be so dark. I don't really want to see thoughts.
I've seen clips, and it is pretty intense.
So the assumption, or they're going to try to lead, that this was the cause of the death?
In the Joker's journal, towards the back of the page, there is... In big letters across the page, goodbye.
Wow.
So it looks like that's what they're hinting at. Also, actually related to the Doctor Who news, Karen Gillan has been announced as on the Guardians of the Galaxy upcoming film, on the cast. I'm thinking that they have not announced what role she will be playing yet. My money's on death. With this Thanos crazy centric world that Marvel is creating, you've got to have a death. Thanos is dating death. I'm imagining that's Karen Gillan.
Now, has it actually been announced that Thanos is going to be the antagonist for the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, or are they saving him for Avengers?
It has not. Actually, they just announced Benicio del Toro is also joining the cast, and his role is not announced either. A lot of people think he's going to be Ronan the Accuser.
Okay.
Or other bad guys. But then there are people who think he's going to be Quasar and Adam Warlock.
Hmm.
So, I'm thinking he's probably going to be Doctor Strange. Because it's Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be great.
We need a Doctor Strange soon.
Indeed. Indeed we do. Alright, so Neil Gaiman's new book is coming out. The Ocean at the End of the Block. It is looking fantastic. It comes out on June 18th, and I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty stoked about that. Also, we've got this introduction of Kerry Kelly into the DC Universe. Do you guys know who Kerry Kelly is?
Not a clue.
Yeah, you do. It's Robin from Dark Knight.
Nobody really knows who Kerry Kelly was.
She's the girl that takes over as Robin in the Dark Knight. Dark Knight Returns.
Yes, Dark Knight Returns.
The Dark Knight Returns. Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, yeah.
Yeah, remember the girl?
I did not remember that.
Nobody really does. She was the most underutilized Robin.
You were always my little monkey wrench, Dick. And then she shows up.
Yeah. Hey. And she is introduced now after the passing of Damian Wayne. Spoiler alert, that was 2 months ago.
I think that was a long time ago. Now, she, like, as you say, though, she's, just to be clear, she's being integrated into the regular
New 52. She is not Robin. She is not Robin yet. But there's no other reason. She was blindsidedly entered as Damian Wayne's ex-tutor.
Okay.
And Alfred, she got into a fight with Bruce, started quoting Titus Andronicus, and Alfred offered her a job walking their dog.
That's weird.
So it's pretty obvious that something's going to be going on with Carrie Kelly. I'm pretty interested to see what goes on. Also in DC news, the Villains Month has expanded into Forever Evil, which is their first line-wide crossover since the New 52 began.
Line-wide, so every book in...
A lot of books are getting multiple books, a lot of... You know, at first I was really excited about Villains Month. I was thinking, hey, this could be really cool, and now I'm just tired.
So now you're actually in my hell, because...
Yeah, how do you feel about crossovers, Phil?
I mean...
Marvel is famous for doing
that. You've heard my angst about events recently. Yeah. I jumped in with AVX, which, take it for what it was, there was a lot of really good points in that. There were a lot of really bad points, too, but, you know, it was decent. A couple months later, where he jumped right into Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron, once again, take for what it is. There's been really good parts, there's been bad parts. I can't have an overall feeling about it yet.
How do you feel about the issues that kind of connect to it?
The AU books. Yes. I thought the way they did them was good, but it was a sweet marketing ploy on Marvel's part, actually. Because, remember when I said it, I was like, oh, you don't have to read everything. The AU books are their own thing. If you're reading Superior Spider-Man, you don't have to read Superior Spider-Man AU for it to make sense. But if you're reading Age of Ultron, you're buying not only Age of Ultron, which was an extra book, you're also buying the AU books, which are extra books. So it was Marvel's good way to go, let's make more money. And overall, they weren't insanely useful. I'll get into the two from most recent during Stuckstick Picks Sayonara. But it just overall, they weren't necessary. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Age of Ultron is over, which is this month, I'm going to get some speckling of Superior Month, which is Superior Villains, Superior Carnage, Superior Spider-Man books that are just going to pump out like crazy in July. And then in August, we're starting an Infinity. It's just endless, endless, endless. Event after event after event after event. And I was thinking of trying to dodge Infinity for the most part, but I am reading things that are lapping into it a little bit at least. I know Guardians of the Galaxy obviously will. So as you can tell with how incredibly quickly and angry I am getting and speaking, that I'm not a giant fan of events all the time. I'm not saying that events themselves are always bad.
No.
Because there is good in events. It's just they lose what they are if you're always in an event.
And I think one a year is probably where it needs
max,
to stay.
Max, maybe one every two.
Yeah.
It's just this thing that it always feels like I'm in an event. Because if you think of Avengers vs. X-Men, technically that was last year. That was 2012. But it was so long and all-encompassing. I think it was 6 months? It was a long time.
It was exhausting.
Six months would be accurate with the 12 issues to a month. It's just, it's too much. It's way too much. And
was that just in 2012?
That was 2012, yeah.
They jumped right into Age of Ultron.
We actually were doing, we started the podcast, I want to say maybe the second month that thing was running, maybe the third at most. And then we got... We had the aftermath stuff, consequences, which ran 5 consecutive weeks after AVX. We got about 2 or 3 months without an event, and then we got Age of Ultron. So it's back to back, and we're going to get really 1 month without an
Superior
event before.
And Infinity and then,
Superior isn't really an event. It's if you read Spider-Man, here's all the stuff going on. All
right.
So, but, I mean, that's my feelings. What about you? Like, do you actually like the concept, or are you feeling a little shaky about them as well?
I'm shaky because it hurts my wallet.
I mean, that's the big thing. Yeah. It really is.
I mean, it's $3 or $4 a book.
Four, really.
Well, for you, for Marvel, yeah. They're all $3.99. Mine are still $2.99 occasionally.
Well, anything in an event won't be $2.99.
No, it will not.
And probably not for DC, for that matter.
No. And so it's exhausting.
It is.
It's exhausting. It's my phone bill. It's my food. It's my gas. It's prioritizing.
I think part of the thing that scares me, too, with, like, Infinity, because I do want to read it. I like Thanos a lot.
It looks neat.
I think it's going to be better than Age of Ultron. We're going into issue 9 tomorrow, and we still haven't seen Ultron.
I doubt we're going to see Ultron.
We will see Ultron, I feel in these next couple issues. But, you know, you go that far in without, and Infinity seems to have potential. But my concern is, say I do decide to get it, and I do all the tie-ins or whatever, or at least buy the main books, I'm concerned that I'll pick up Avengers, and I know that the Avengers run right now is good. I'm scared if I buy it during the event, I'm going to continue to buy it, and I can't afford
to
do that.
That's why I'm sticking with X-Men, because X-Men has been better than it's ever been, in my opinion.
We'll get into that, too.
Okay. Also, in other news, we've got you guys, listeners, to my last podcast, to our last podcast, know that I had kind of an emotional response to the Fables latest issue. Well, Fables is now crossing over with another very well-written book, Unwritten, which is a Vertigo book, The Unwritten by Mike Carey, and it's a great book, and I'm really looking forward to that crossover. Also, they have a video game coming out in a couple months for Xbox, PS, PlayStation Network, and PC and Mac, which is Fables, The Wolf Among Us, which looks pretty awesome, and it looks like they're taking the art directly from the books. Like, they're designing the art after the style of the book.
When is that coming out?
That comes out very soon. I'm going to say August. And they've just signed up for a Fables movie. A feature-length Fables movie with the team that gave us Harry Potter.
Huh.
David Heyman and Jeffrey Clifford.
I feel like I need to read Fables.
Fables has been rocking since 2002. It's been faithful, it's been strong, it's been good. Like I said, it could have ended after 50 issues, it did not. It could have ended after 102 issues, it did not. Bill Willingham is a fantastic author, and he's done great things with Fables. And in other news, I know the book is coming up from DC that Darren's pretty excited about.
Scott Snyder and Jim Lee are doing a Superman book, Superman Unchained.
I didn't realize Jim Lee was part of that.
Jim Lee is the artist.
How can you go wrong?
Oh, man.
Scott Snyder and Jim Lee.
Yeah, Scott Snyder, I believe, taking his first crack at Superman. So his work on Court of Owls and the New 52, which was clearly the gem of that first year of the New 52, was peerless.
Was that the tease Superman that we got for Free Comic Book Day, or is that a different... Mm-hmm. Really? So
that wasn't Jim Lee. He was the cover artist for that.
Yeah, but I was just wondering if that's the story arc with the other kid.
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
Okay. Now, is he off of Justice League now, Jim Lee?
I'm pretty sure he is. He hasn't been around for a while.
He self-admittedly has problems meeting deadlines. Freely admits this, by the way.
Well, with art, you can accept that. Ivan Reyes has been doing Justice League.
Oh, okay.
And he used to be on Aquaman.
I stopped at issue 12, so...
Yeah, I still read it once in a while. I'm sorry, Gene Ha.
Isn't he?
So
we're familiar with her.
I guess before we really bounce out of all this industry news stuff, we should talk about the Doctor.
You're our resident Doctor Who expert. Now, we're all fans.
Yeah.
And we've all seen the most recent Like, the not the reboot, but the revival of Doctor Who beginning in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston and beyond. I know you and I, but you go all the way back to Tom Baker.
Yeah, I mean, on and off. I missed some stuff in the middle there, of course, and I've seen some stuff before Tom Baker as well, but that was after I grew up with Tom Baker in my house, thanks to my father. One of the great things he did, that in the original Star Trek with Kirk. Oh, yeah. You grew up with that. You grew up in a house like that. It's hard not to be a nerd. So I spent some time today, because I knew this was happening tonight, researching potential doctors. And I spent a lot of time doing it. I'm not going to go through the whole list, because it's kind of an extensive list. But I wanted to talk about a couple people sporadically throughout. And I need to dodge one person that should be higher on the list, in my opinion, just because Darren has not seen the newest episode. But the teaser at the end, anybody who is listening and has saw it, I feel that that person has the best chance of being the Doctor, but not for the long run. I think it's going to have something to do.
A lot of people agree with you.
I think that's going to have something to do with the 50th anniversary, and I think that might be what leads to Matt Smith regenerating, so that he does not end up like that. Regardless, the top two right now, the buzz on the internet, are Russell Tovey, who's on Being Human. I'm not super familiar with him.
The American or the British?
The British one.
Okay, I've never seen
him. He kind of has big ears. He also played a couple bit parts in Doctor Who in the past. And normally, I mean, you see that overlap frequently. Martha Jones played her own cousin in an earlier episode before she was Martha Jones. Same with the person
Karen
who plays. Karen
Gillian played in the priestess.
Pompeii one.
Yeah, in the Pompeii.
Yeah, she was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you see little parts throughout, and the person that played Gwen in Torchwood was in the Spirit one early on. So, Russell Tovey. The second person who's at the top is Rupert Grint. If you don't know that name, that is Ron Weasley from the Harry Potter movies. Now, if you've been watching this reboot of Doctor Who, every single time that he has regenerated, he's like, oh, I'm not a ginger this time. He wants to be a gingy.
Which Rupert?
Yeah. Doesn't he not want? He goes, oh, still not a ginger.
No, no, he wants it. He does. He seems very sad that he hasn't yet to be a ginger, because he's not been a ginger yet.
How long has he been alive?
800 years.
He's approaching
900 years.
So, I mean.
So, in my notes, I said Ron freaking Weasley, for real.
I think that would be awesome.
I guess when I heard the name initially and I knew who that was, my brain went instantly to Sorcerer's Stone,
he's
Ron
like
Weasley.
8 years old,
this little kid. And then I thought about like the recent movies, and I looked at some recent pictures of him, and he's grown up a lot. And if he's gotten his acting chops up to par, which I felt was possible considering he was a kid going through that, and seeing what the other Harry Potter kids have been able to do since, he might do a good job.
I agree.
So I have hope. Just to run down a couple of other ones, Martin Freeman, that's our Bilbo Baggins, from
and
the...
And Arthur Dent and Watson.
Yes. Ben Whishaw, which was Q in Skyfall.
Oh, that'd be like a Matt Smith clone, then.
Kind of. And that's... Well, you gotta remember, when Matt Smith came out, he was kind of clony of David Tennant.
That's true.
Yeah, he was.
So, that wouldn't be unheard of. There are a couple interesting things on here. There are slight rumors that they might want him to regenerate as a female.
I've heard Billy Piper.
Billy Piper was on the list. Now, as a Doctor Who fan, I have multiple issues with that. I can understand why he would go Billy Piper if there's any kind of mental leak as to why he regenerates to what he regenerates to. Considering that in the past few regenerations and companions, I would say that he really got closest to Billy Piper's character, Rose.
If there's a love of his life, is it not Rose?
I would say so, just because he wasn't able to with Amy Pond, and River Song is her own thing. So the fact that maybe, especially after the 50th anniversary episode, where he will have interacted with her again, that she may be on his mind when he's regenerating, as potential that he can end up being her. Now, I don't think that's a good call. I don't think Billy Piper as the Doctor would be enjoyable.
She was on the list when David Tennant was leaving, too.
Yeah.
She was.
Yeah.
So, the odds of her doing it aren't quite as high.
I'm pretty sure Billy Piper's busy doing her own thing.
Which would be what?
She's not doing anything at this point. She was doing...
What's she doing on the Secret Diary of a Call Girl?
I don't think that's going on anymore. I thought that was canceled. But okay. I could be wrong. I never really watched the show. Just to jump around a little bit more, a little further down the list was Tilda Swinton, who played the White Witch in Narnia. As another female potential.
I always look at her and I see Conan O'Brien.
Oh, suck. Ewan McGregor fell on the list, which I would think would be weird.
That's a little weird.
But potential.
Yeah.
Just because every single time the Doctor generates, one other person always falls on the list. And that's Rowan Atkinson.
I would see Mr. Bean. He has done that in an internet sketch.
I haven't seen it, but I heard he did it flawlessly.
He
wants the role.
He would be a good doctor.
Yes, he would.
Will he ever actually be the doctor? Probably not.
It would be a really interesting way to go after you could say, like, the doctors in the new era have been as close as you can get to the matinee idols. I mean, Christopher Eccleston's not the handsomest man in the world, but he had a physical presence, and David Tennant's like the heartthrob, followed by Matt Smith. So it would be an interesting way Rowan Atkinson is not going to be considered the pinup idol of Doctor Who.
I could see Rupert Grint more falling into that, because as gingers go, I guess he would be considered an attractive man. But, you know, I'm not super...
When it was the classic Doctor Who's, like, Tom Baker was not a fan... She was not an idol. He wasn't...
Oh, gosh, no. None of them were, until Tennant.
Sylvester McCoy was...
And, I mean, that's fine. That's a problem, getting someone like Ewan McGregor or someone. It's, like, someone that everyone knows, and you're going to bring all these other people. They're like, ooh, and Ewan McGregor. And then they're like, what is this show? Mm-hmm. So, I think... And it's the same with Rupert Grint, really. You're going to have all these girls that were chasing Ron Weasley for some ungodly reason.
Bring Ewan McGregor, like, I watched the show, and they screwed up the continuity. He walked into a small box, and there was this big room.
Oh, that just made me think of the last episode. Darren, catch up. Please.
I have told you 1,000 times it's not going to happen.
Oh,
until...
suck. But those are the ones that really jumped out, and I can't talk about the another person that's toward the end of this list. There was stuff down further that was just absolutely ridiculous.
What about the rumor that I've heard that Tennant is going to go back?
No.
That he's going to that he won't regenerate, that they're going to do like another run of him?
No.
That's not happening.
Without any real knowledge of it, I could say, on all of my Doctor Who knowledge, impossible. One, David Tennant, even if he doesn't regenerate as the Doctor, he's not the Doctor. He is a human being, and that's a clone. True.
But, here's the thing. From what I understand, and you're the authority here, the Doctor regenerates, how many times? 13. And then that's the... That's...
He got recharged from River Song.
Okay.
During the doctors. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what that whole
totally
thing
missed was. That.
Now, the reality
is this
is
from the recent season?
They never know. Yes. No. The
River
so
hasn't
now.
Shown up in the river.
No, this would have been at the end of the last season. You're caught up on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So you're up until this most recent season. So this would have been the doctor's wife when she was trying to kill him, and then she ended up and she gave him the... Do not remember.
That's Let's Kill,
okay.
Let's Kill Clinton.
So my...
So...
Or not Clinton, Hitler.
Hitler.
Let's Kill Hitler.
Clinton, you... What?
I'm going to hell.
So...
But it's...
They never...
So basically what you're saying is my Ouya handle, the 14th Doctor, totally obsolete now.
Probably, yeah.
Darn it.
Well, I'm not saying that for sure. They never blatantly said...
Well, I was just thinking, like, that's a way to extend it. David Tennant regenerates.
Well, I'm 10 again. Well, and that's the thing with Moffat is you never know what he's throwing at you. But my watching of the episode where he was killed and then River Song gave him her regeneration meant that she forfeited her ability to regenerate and gave it to him, which gives him more regenerations.
Hmm. I love the internet meme and that scene, the beginning of the season when he gets shot, and it has that uncomfortable moment when you watch yourself get shot by your wife, who's standing next to your best friend while she's pregnant with your wife.
Yeah,
that was very funny.
It's good stuff, but I mean that's where I am with it. Russell Tovey, I don't know very well. Rupert Grint, like I said, could be interesting. And I wouldn't mind seeing a season with the person at the bottom of the list who, end of season stuff. I think that would make a solid Doctor for at least a season.
I'm actually on his side.
Where is the most British sounding man of all time, Benedict Cumberbatch?
He's not on the list.
But he's already doing it because he's Sherlock Holmes and that's what the Doctor is. He's a derivative of Superman and Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I don't think they would ever do...
I doubt it.
No.
That's like everyone says House is going to do it. And I'm like, he did not it already. He just wasn't called the Doctor.
Right.
Not on the list.
What about Dr. Cox from Scrubs? Where's he?
That
would be awesome.
He'll be a great Doctor.
They do have Doc Connors from The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
What was his name? It's on my list. Rice Ethans.
Whatever.
What a great name.
He gets Rice.
Why can't we have an American Doctor?
It's not time
because
yet.
Because it wouldn't
there
work.
There were Americans on the list.
It's time. I'll tell you why it's time.
It's
and
a British
it
if, show.
No, because Superman, played by a Brit. Batman,
Stop
played
it.
By a guy who's
Stop
Welsh.
It.
And Spider-Man is
Stop
played
it.
By a Brit. We can have an American Doctor. Jim Carrey needs to get on the phone because his career, he would be the best American Doctor.
What about Patterson?
Oh, my God, he would.
What about Patterson Joseph?
Who the
He'll
hell
be
is
a
Patterson?
Black
oh,
doctor.
My God, he would. He would, wouldn't
Jim Carrey would be a great Doctor.
No.
I would love it.
Nope.
I am going to start that right now.
Don't
Jim
you
Jim Carrey,
do you know,
Doctor.
Do you know how many...
13, or 12
would,
Doctor.
You would
Jim
set off
Carrey.
World War III.
Jim Carrey.
You are aware of how 12th
Doctor.
If he talked with to one alien with his butt...
I would love
game
it.
Game over.
I would love it.
All righty then.
Oh, terrible. This spiraled so badly. I had a serious breakdown, and now we're talking about Jim Carrey butt talking. The Centaurians.
Anyway.
Wait a minute. Hold
no,
on.
No.
Even better. I can go. I could do this forever.
Oh God.
We need to go back to the.
If you say
we've
Adam
done,
Sandler, I'm getting.
Oh hell no. No, Adam Sandler's no Jim Carrey. Here's the thing. They did like elderly doctor, the old middle aged doctor.
Not Matthew Perry.
What?
Thank you.
Yep.
Who the hell said that?
I'm just trying to jump.
Oh my God.
He's just trying.
Doesn't
to...
he have crack the snort?
Sure he does.
I was going
to
say, you could go, instead of the younger one, you can go older, Billy Shatz.
And on that note.
Yeah, wow. All
right. Well.
Tomorrow, you're going to think it's a great idea.
I'm
no. Your mind is blown.
Never.
Your mind is
never.
Blown.
I'm trying to think of it now.
Your mind is blown.
Right?
It's tomorrow, you're going to wake up and go,
ooh,
wait
ooh,
a minute.
Even better. William Shatner.
That's what I just said. That's what I just didn't I just say that?
That is what you just said.
Yes,
yes.
I know.
Do you know what I want to do?
Yeah.
I want to slap you because William Shatner would be the worst doctor ever.
Hello, Lee. Geronimo.
Shut up and talk about Superman.
Anyway, we're moving into our retro review, which is not about. Yeah.
That'd be
it's
me.
Actually, Darren's got it this week.
Well, I reviewed season 6 of Doctor Who, and point for point have decided where William Shatner would be a great doctor. Now, let me explain this to you. That's not at all what I'm doing.
No.
To prime myself for the release of Man of Steel, which is almost upon us.
What, 2 weeks?
And Superman
yeah.
Unchained.
Jeez.
And Superman Unchained.
It does look amazing.
Non,
it's already in my pull file.
Non-Marvel
by the way.
Might
yeah.
be on my list.
It's
and
in
I
my pull file.
Just dropping a couple Marvel books.
Yeah, you wouldn't be. You know, I'll just give it to you when we're done.
Okay, okay.
That's fine. Superman for all seasons. I'm priming myself for Man of Steel. Man of Steel was not on my list of most movies I needed to see. Of course, as a super fan, I was going to see it, but I think up until about a month ago, everything we had seen was like, yeah, it looks okay. And then the recent batch of trailers they
Ooh,
released,
boy.
You're like. Holy
I didn't care to
crap.
See it at all, and now I'm...
They were
yeah.
withholding everything, because
yeah.
it looks like this thing's going to rock our socks off. Superman for All Seasons, 1998, Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, and Bjarne Hansen.
That's like your dream team.
Well, yes, it is, and
yeah.
Bjarne Hansen, was he the colorist for Dark Knight Returns? Might have been. Might have been. I'm not absolutely sure of that, and please don't quote me. We do a lot of this with a single iPad in front of us.
Yes.
So, Superman for All Seasons comes around in a time where your superheroes were relegated to comic books. There weren't superhero television shows. There were odd superhero movies. Like, you had Batman, And then you had, like, the Shadow, the Phantom. You had these weird, odd ones that came out. But you didn't have superhero movies. Not the way you have them now.
Meteor Man.
So, if you are trying to get a superhero fix, you went to comics. And that was it.
Yeah.
In the 90s, that's what you got outside of the Batman movies. And Superman for All Seasons is one of the best Superman stories you can read. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. The reason Batman and Superman work so well together is that stark juxtaposition of their characters. One has godlike powers, the other is a mere mortal. But go beyond and juxtapose the tone that follows those two characters as well. Hold on a second. Sorry, I had to get that out. Batman is thrilling, and Superman, this is what I've always contended. Batman is thrilling, Superman should be emotional. Batman is thrilling because of his mortality, and Superman is emotional because no character in comics is more aware of their humanity than the alien, Superman. Superman for All Seasons presents that humanity through four different perspectives, spring, summer, fall, and winter, as the landscapes through which those perspectives kind of gain their tones throughout the story, that the underlying tones that follow the entire four-issue book. Now, spring, narrated by Jonathan Kent. For Clark, he has now manifested all of his powers, and you get the sense that he's just now realized exactly how much power he has. And everything is new and exciting, but for both he and Clark, they are kind of lamenting everything that lies behind, because Clark is, you know, graduating Smallville High, and he's realizing that I am the only one on this planet that can do what I do. There is no way I can stay in Smallville. And he loves Smallville. He grew up in Smallville. He wants to stay there, but he realizes, I can't. I have a responsibility.
And it looks like they're really going to be exploring that in the upcoming movie.
It sure does. And then Summer is narrated by Lois Lane. Everything heats up. And like the fireworks on the 4th of July, there's almost that bombastic celebration. And in Summer, he makes his triumphant appearance as Superman, and it's told through like newspaper clippings, and it shows like all the great feats, and the people are starting to like see him around town. They're like, okay, there he is, Superman. But just like those fireworks, they're gone like that. That bombastic sense of celebration is very fleeting. And one of my favorite couple page panels for Superman. Like, if anyone asks me, what is Superman, I'll show him. There's a moment where he saves the day. And the next thing you see is him sitting in his one-room apartment by himself, just kind of sitting there. In his, you know, Superman suit is, like, lying on the bed, and he's just sitting here, just laying there. It's almost like he's thinking, like, I've got nothing else to do. I just went out and saved the world, and now I'm sitting alone in my apartment. Very, very, very... speaks so much to Superman's character, and it gives you that sense of he's lonely.
Yeah.
He's alone. He's maybe even more alone than Batman. Batman's got Robin. Batman's got Alfred. He's got Nightwing. He's got the Bat family.
Who's Superman? Yeah.
He can't even tell Lois Lane his true self. Winter is narrated by, oddly enough, Lana Lang, who laments her lost days. Wait a minute, I skipped one. Excuse me. Fall. Fall is narrated by Lex Luthor, who ominously alludes that while some prefer to call the season autumn, he prefers fall. The leaves from falling from the trees and the grayer skies provide very fitting tone for the penultimate tale in this chapter, which is essentially he sets Superman up to fail in the best way he can. It's a bit of a I don't want to give away a spoiler if you haven't read it, especially since I'm sending you home with it tonight.
Yeah.
You've read it, right, Johnny?
I've not.
Okay, you'll get it next.
Yeah, thank you.
Where he sets Superman up for failure at his deepest level. He knows he can't harm him physically. There's no kryptonite in this story. So he sets him up for failure in a different way.
That's what I want to read then.
Yeah, all right. Sets him up for failure at Superman's core. And it rocks Superman to his core. And then Winter is narrated by Lana Lang, who laments her lost days with Clark. She, along with Jonathan and Martha, are the only ones privy to his dual identity. Superman showed her one night. She takes us back to Smallville High, where her one dream was to marry Clark, but then loses Clark, not to another woman, but essentially, as she says, I lost him to the world. Mm-hmm. One night before he left Smallville, he took out Lana and he held her hands He goes, I want to show you something, and I have something to tell you. And she thinks he's going to ask her to marry him, but then he starts flying and showing her, this is what I can do. I can do all these things. Everything is cold in winter, but personally, I've always enjoyed winter for its silence. I don't know. It's like, I like summer, but everything's so noisy. Lawnmowers, you know, it's like cars are out, people are out driving all over the place. You know, people are out screaming and playing at night. Winter, you walk outside and it's so silent, and you get a sense of how silent winter is. But just at the end, there is a fitting climax, and it's also a very quiet one that somehow re-energizes Superman. I don't want to give too much away, and this is one of the best Superman stories you're going to read. And as I kind of alluded in another podcast, that Jeff Loeb has a way of writing things very locally. Like, Superman should be out fighting universes, but in this, he's very, very, very quiet. And he brings it down to this very, very local and contained level.
Sounds very human, actually.
It is extremely human, and that's the great juxtaposition between Batman and Superman, as I mentioned. Batman is thrilling, but no one is more aware of their humanity than the alien from Krypton in comics. And that's why Superman for All Seasons is essential Superman reading. I read this back when it first came out. I was a fan of Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale way, way back when. This is on the heels of The Long Halloween. This is the next thing they did for DC Comics. I picked it up immediately. And, you know, it's very rare that you're going to find a team that can do Batman so well and then just picks up and does Superman just as well. This is the series I would give someone. It's like, I need a really good Superman story. I've never read Superman comics. I hand it off. Superman for All Seasons, just as good today as it was when I read it back in 1998. Pardon me.
Man. Well, now that you handed off the past to the future, I guess it's time to talk about what rocks today on our Stuck Stick Pick Sayonara. So, to start with, I'm going to talk about the things I'm stuck on. You had mentioned Christopher Yost when we were discussing our writers. His work in Avenging Spider-Man is awesome. He's giving us a little bit of filler as to what Otto Octavius is up to when he's kind of being skeevy. He's collecting the Sinister Six, as I mentioned previously, and this issue actually deals with, I'm on issue 21, deals with him collecting Chameleon from a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier.
Interesting.
There's fighting with the Incredible Hulk, there's Hawkeye and Black Widow. It's pretty solid. Uncanny X-Force. Humphreys, Afana. It started off kind of weak. I was not a big fan. Thrilled. This issue focused in the brain of Bishop. So we find out why Bishop's been kind of... We find out what happened to Bishop after he was hunting Hope.
Interesting.
It is wonderful. And we start to see some interactions with Phantomax. Plus, the artwork is all dreamscape, because the majority of the issue takes place in Bishop's brain. So, there is a lot of really cool stuff. There's a specific page where they're fighting the bear spirit, which is very cool. So I'm now stuck on that as well.
That is a great looking book.
As we have discussed many of times, Brian Michael Bendis' work on his X-Men titles have been spot on. Uncanny X-Men number 6 is no exception. They are starting to battle Dormammu.
Dormammu.
Oh my god.
My only experience with Dormammu was the old 90s Superman cartoon.
Well, it's to battle Dormammu to kind of keep control over Magic's abilities. Because, as we've stated before, after AVX, anyone who had direct contact with the Phoenix Force is losing complete control over themselves. Magic is no exception, and she is really powerful. Back into my stuck instead of my stick is Wolverine and the X-Men. We are finally starting the Hellfire Club saga. We see the full staff, finally, for the Hellfire Club, and there are some interesting parts. They added the last staff member in this issue.
That blew my mind.
And they also added the last student that they are pilfering from Wolverine's school.
Didn't blow my mind.
Not a super surprise, but I feel like he's going in slightly covert. I don't know if you got that feeling as well.
Matter Eater Lad.
Quentin Quire.
Don't know who that is.
Spoiler.
It's not a spoiler. We saw that one coming.
Yeah, Quentin Quire has always been
a little bit of a shocker. Was the new X-Men by Brian
Adjectiveless
by X-Men. Brian Wood. It's just X-Men. It's the one that they've been marketing as the all-female X-Men team. Now, just hearing that made me not want to read it. Not because I'm some sort of giant sexist. It's just that if I
Which
feel...
Which he is, by the way.
I am. I mean, what can you do about it? I'm not. I'm happily married and my wife controls me. But...
Not so.
I don't like when a comic comes into reality riding on the coattails of something like, it's an all-female team, so obviously you need to read me. I was also not a giant fan
it's,
of
You feel
when,
like it's a stunt.
Yeah, exactly. And I was not a giant fan of Jubilee being a vampire. Brian Wood did such a nice job not actually touching on anything, kind of just working off of the relationships that have been developed over the years between Storm, Rogue, Kitty Pryde, Jubilee, Rachel Gray, and Psylocke. They have a relationship. And there's so much that happens in this first book. If you are not familiar with X-Men at all, it's hard for me to recommend it to you. But if you have ever really had run-ins with these characters, and you know that Kitty Pryde can phase things, if you know that Rogue absorbs powers, if you understand that Storm controls the weather, and you can jump into that without any question, it's a good book, and it's a good read.
Mm-hmm.
And my almost pick, but not quite, was X-Men Legacy number 11.
Which was actually really good.
Quite good. Yeah. We left off with David Heller, Legion, debating dropping his powers because he knows that if he keeps his powers, ultimately either his quasi-girlfriend Ruth is going to have to kill him or he's going to have to kill his quasi-girlfriend Ruth. So he's been debating. Yeah, the book is crazy. It's not like anything else. It's very in his own head, and since he's schizophrenic,
It's really a very well-written book.
Yeah, Simon Spurrier knows what he's doing. It makes me convinced that Simon Spurrier is insane, and the few interactions I've had with the man, I can stick to that. But by the end of this, we find out who created the mutant killing gene, which we find out is not actually mutant killing. It puts them into kind of a vegetable state, would you
Catatonic.
Agree?
Yeah.
So that it's not that they don't have their abilities, they just have no reason to use them. And we find out who does it, and Legion still, or David Haller, who does not like being called Legion, still willing to jump on that bandwagon. And
after everything Legion did, would you want to be called
exactly.
Legion?
Exactly. And the antagonist is not surprising, but I wasn't expecting Spurrier to use him.
It's a good choice, though.
On to my sticks. A plus X. I was originally told this was supposed to be a limited time series. It looks like it is going to keep going, which is why it is on the stick and probably going to fall in Sayonara very soon. This issue was fun, though, and that's the thing. It's always been fun. It's not been bad. It's just it doesn't go anywhere. And if I'm putting $4 into a book, I kind of want it to go somewhere. It's a story. This one was a story between Hawkeye and Deadpool. And there's a story between...
What a combo.
Yeah, it was fun. And a story between Spider-Woman and Kitty Pryde and Lockheed. Because Lockheed has had interactions with Spider-Woman in the past. As always, fun, doesn't really go anywhere. I'm giving it one more issue because there was a Captain America Wolverine story that they've been teasing since this thing launched that looks very good. And if it disappoints, it will hit my sayonara. I'm going to quickly talk about Fearless Defenders 4AU. It was a tie-in to Age of Ultron, and I use tie-in loosely. It just happened to take place in the future that Wolverine and Sue Storm created by killing Hank Pym. That's pretty much it. I mean, there is nothing really good here. If you like the characters of Fearless Defenders, go for it. If not, jump past it. Scarlet Spider probably should have been in my stick pile more so than my stuck pile, but it keeps teetering back and forth. A while back, Kane cut a deal with the Assassin's Guild to not kill him and his friends, and he would take care of one person for them in the future. They finally told him who he had to kill. That person is Wolverine.
Oh, man.
So this issue takes place in the Jean Grey school with Kane and Arasali, who is now going under the name of, I can't remember her name, I want to say Mockingbird or something like that. Hummingbird, not Mockingbird. Mockingbird is another character. Hummingbird, and she can, like, completely manipulate people. It's actually very good, and it really should be my stuff pile, not my stick. Not my stick pile. Uncanny Avengers 8 AU. The only reason it's in my stuck, or rather stick, instead of my stuck, is because it's Age of Ultron. It actually dealt more with the main storyline of Uncanny Avengers. It's given us more of the Apocalypse Twins and why they're working with Kang.
Interesting.
And I'm sticking with Venom. And I read some reviews online to go with my review, and a lot more people are seeming to like it than me. I just felt that it was a big cop-out. We've been getting this giant tease that Venom is going to fight Toxin. He's going to fight Toxin. They end up teaming up, like, the old Spider-Man Venom thing, where Spider-Man's like, oh, we have a common enemy, Venom, let's be buddies. And they fight together, and Venom's like, well, I'll just deal with you later, and leaves. So he kind of leaves Flash with the whole, hey, I'm going to keep an eye on you before I end you. Those are all my sticks. My pick of the, I guess, really only couple weeks was Superior Spider-Man number 10.
No way. You've been, that's been, oh.
This is the first issue that Peter Parker is no longer a thing. It's all Otto Octavius, because they got rid of Peter in issue 9.
Yeah.
It is so awesome to watch the mistakes Otto's making. The fact that so many people are starting to go, there's something wrong.
Starting to catch on. I thought that was funny.
Even the cops are like, do you remember when he used to leave letters on his guys? Well, he's not doing that anymore. I kind of miss those days. Instead, he leaves bloody guys hung up in webs because Otto's beating the crap out of everyone. And he's dating a weird midget girl, which is a cool relationship that they're building.
I actually read this this issue, and it's...
And the Green Goblin thing that's starting
looks that's kind of weird.
Awesome. One, I don't know who Green Goblin is. And two, he has an army. And to end my stack, I have another sayonara for the second time since we've been doing the show. Gambit. I've tried so hard. There have been moments that I've really liked this.
What issue was it?
I actually read 13, but this is 12. This is the last one I picked
up. You hung with it for a long time.
I 12 issues is a long time to stick with a book. They ended the first real arc.
You gave it a good chance.
It was okay, but it's Gambit, and I have problems liking Gambit. He's just kind of...
He's a poor man's Wolverine.
Don't get me started on Wolverine.
Okay.
I'm tired of Wolverine, too.
Everybody's tired of Wolverine.
I had to say goodbye. Joel was dealt with in the end of 12. When I saw War Machine on the cover of 13, and I saw X-Men sitting relatively close to it, X-Men number 1,
mm-hmm.
I went with X-Men number 1 instead of Gambit, and I think I made the best call. Possible.
I think you did too.
And those are my stuck stick pick sayonaras of this show. So, Johnny, let's hear what you have to say.
Well, I've got some overlap with you in the stuck pile. X-Men, number 1. All-girl cast. There were elements of it that really, really bugged me.
Like what?
Kitty Pryde used internet jargon in casual conversation. This is Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
Alright, she is not a mutant genius. She is a legitimate genius.
He walked in my house angry about this today.
Can I argue this real fast? As a teacher, and Darren can back me on this a little bit, you pick up on some things that kids say.
Alright.
And when you're communicating with other younger people, sometimes you say them just out of, like, knee-jerk reaction. I don't know if you do.
I don't know. Johnny seems
pretty
funny. I've
actually done it.
But that's the thing. The way that I feel about Kitty Pryde is she spent so much time in this school, no matter how intelligent she is, because I feel that I'm an intelligent person and that Darren is an intelligent person.
You still throw out
but
the occasional.
But they happen every once in a while. I say stupid things. I'm like, why would I ever say that? And I'm pretty sure Kitty was kicking herself after the fact. So, as everything else that Brian Wood did in that issue, I could honestly believe that maybe he did that with that intent in mind. Just to make you feel better.
So that's
actually the best argument that I've heard. I still don't like it.
Is it that kills the issue though? Or is that just like
hurts.
It's still in the stockpile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's still in my stockpile. It's a great issue. But it did hurt.
Could have been the pick of the week if not for
the
Kitty
OMG.
Pryde's,
it's just like WTF, folks.
But you like that argument? That's good.
That was a good argument.
Makes sense.
And I actually, and she is communicating with Jubilee, who is significantly younger than she is.
Who is a younger girl,
yeah.
Who's a vampire.
Aside from that, Psylocke was great.
Oh, God.
Wasn't she awesome?
I'm loving the way they're writing Psylocke
at this point. And Rachel Gray. Even Rachel Gray was awesome. Now the other thing that I had a problem with. The other thing that I had a problem with was Rogue in one of the this is just a very, very minor thing. Rogue in one of the frames was wearing booty shorts.
It's Rogue. She can wear what she wants.
But what if she bumps... She's a teacher. What if she bumps into a student?
Then she bumps into him good.
I guess so. So I had a little bit of an ethical problem with that.
And just think, Rogue has always wore kind of skimpy things when she's around the school.
Okay.
And boom goes the dynamite.
And there we go. I just thought it was irresponsible. I mean, Rogue's supposed to be a teacher now.
To be fair, most of the kids should know to stay away from her, too.
And, well, yeah, I guess that's right. But otherwise, it's still in my stuck pile, and it was my pick, but there were other books that were better. And this was a great issue. I loved the antagonist. Oh, my God, the antagonist is beautiful.
Yeah, for number one,
it really hit the ground running.
It really did.
You stole the words. Yes, this was a great issue. I can recommend X-Men 1, although the train wreck didn't make any sense in lines of physics.
No, whatever.
But I negated that because it's X-Men and Hank McCoy isn't in this issue.
That is correct.
So it's okay. All right, and I'm still stuck on Wolverine and the X-Men. I can echo everything that Phil just said. The prelude to the Hellfire Saga sets up an excellent scene. I like the stuff in outer space, I like the stuff on Earth, I like the stuff in the sixth dimension. It was great. I am once again stuck on Batgirl. I was wavering for a little bit. Batgirl just introduced a new antagonist, the Ventriloquist. She is... wicked.
And Simone's back on it, right?
Yeah, and Gail Simone is back on Batgirl, which...
The Ventriloquist is a woman in this?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And it's really very, very twisted. We're getting into Batgirl's psyche, and you know how I love books with psyche. I'm really enjoying this. I'm stuck on Justice League of America. This is the third Justice League book. And it's actually written really, really well. Jeff Johns again, with David Finch as the artist. David Finch, come on. It's really very, very good. You've got a list of B-line heroes, of B-list heroes, and Catwoman. It's really a very good story. Sticking with All New X-Men. It's an amazing story, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm going to stick with it, because it's cool. Sticking with Animal Man, Jeff Lemire. It's faltered. It's almost in sayonara, but I'm sticking with it, because it's cool. And it's Animal Man, and it's Jeff Lemire. So I'm sticking with it just because of that. Sticking with Batman and, Robin's gone, but it's Batman and the... Right. Darren is leaping through Justice League of America right now saying, wow. And, I'm sticking with Batman and Robin, we'll call it, because it's the same team and the same author. Because it's building up to the new Robin, who... And it's introducing Carrie Kelly. I'm a big fan of The Dark Knight Rises. So I'm going to stick with
Batman.
Dark
Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns. Thank you. Rises was
the
movie.
I do the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm sticking with it until they discover who the new Robin is. I'm sticking with Justice League because we got the Trinity War coming up. And it's not bad enough to make me want to stop reading it. I keep wanting to drop this, but I have to stick with Cable and the X-Force. Because it's just so freaking cool. It's science fiction. It's action. It's drama. It's cool. It's Dennis Hopeless and an author whose first name I cannot remember. I know Phil was reading this for a while, weren't you?
I still am.
All right.
I talked about this last show.
Salvador. Salvador LaRocca. And it's just so freaking cool. Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm sticking with because they're going to have a guest team. Yeah, Neil Gaiman's coming up. I'm actually tried out a couple new books from DC this month that I was really happy with. I was not expecting to be because it looked like they were getting political. But it was Gail Simone on The Movement. The Movement is kind of like the Occupy Gotham thing, which is the underwritten ghetto superheroes. Gail Simone, bless you, does the writing, whereas Freddie Williams II does the artwork. It was a lot of fun. It will be one of those books where you don't know who the heroes are. Because it has bad cops, it has religion, it has manipulation, it has sexual affairs, it has... It's a great book. It's a lot of fun, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And these are ghetto superheroes. I'm really liking it. And the other one, number one, was The Green Team, which was the other end, the overprivileged children of trillionaires. And they get together, and they're talking, and they're having fun, and they're researching new technology and finding out what they want to fund. They've got great character. It's a great character book. That is by... Trying to find the artist. The author. Oh, there we go. It's by Art Baltazar, who is the... author, Art Baltazar Franco, who is the author, and Ig Guerrera as the artist. It was a lot of fun. It's a teen book, but, you know, it's overprivileged kids, and they're pretty cool. And my pick of the month has to be Batman. They closed the door on Damian Wayne in a very emotional, very well-played way. It does not look like we'll be getting Damian Wayne back anytime soon.
Good.
This was, hey, he was...
I reserve my rights to dislike Damian Wayne. Still Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder.
Oh, yes. Still Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder.
They are about to embark on Year Zero, right?
They are.
Is that the next issue?
Yes, it is.
I think I'm going to add that to my profile.
I think you should. But this was a great issue where it has Batman fighting himself, basically. And it ends with Batman making peace. And it's really...
Can I see?
Absolutely. It's really a great issue. Oh. I'm very happy with it.
Greg Capullo.
Right.
I just love his Batman.
This team.
Short-eared Batman.
Team. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have been
The
best.
They've been on it since the beginning of the...
They have.
Batman Beyond.
Yes.
Cameo.
Yes.
I think I need to pick up Year Zero. It's both he and Capullo are on Year Zero,
yes,
right?
I believe so.
I am definitely going to add it.
I believe you should. So that's my pile.
That leaves it to
on
me.
To Darren.
So when we go in stuck, stick, pick, sayonara, technically we should probably go stick, stuck, pick, sayonara, right?
Technically yes,
yeah.
But we're not.
I actually have a hard time distinguishing between books I'm stuck on and books I'm sticking with. Now, you would assume that your pick comes out of the books you're stuck on, so you take the books you're stuck on and you choose the one that you like the most, right?
Right.
So I've had a real hard time distinguishing between which books I'm sticking with because, you know, all right, it doesn't hurt me that much, and which books I really, really, really enjoy. Like, technically, I could have gone with all my books could have been I'm sticking with. I could have just picked one and gone, But I'm going to go ahead and say I'm stuck on Masters of the Universe number 2.
I thought you were kind of iffy on...
I am stuck on it for this reason. For what you would assume, it's outside the New 52, is probably one of their low-level books that they're, you know, if they sell just a 20,000 copies, they're happy with. I have to say the artwork is pretty darn good. I'm not saying it's top-level flagship book stuff, but for a level of book like Masters of the Universe, personally, I don't know how well it's selling. I don't know if it's doing any good. They did a 6-issue miniseries, and I guess it did well enough for them to say, hey, let's do a monthly series. The story, though, I really like. They have turned Hordak, for those familiar with the Masters of the Universe legacy, Hordak was a villain from another dimension who, depending on which timeline you read, was or was not Skeletor's teacher. They turned him into this vampiric sort of mythological legend that not many people believe in, and a general in Hordak's army was Adora, who most people know as She-Ra. Well, she shows up in issue 2 and is brutal. Very interesting way to go. I have to say I did, after much consternation, elevate Masters of the Universe from my stick with to, for now, they've got me. I didn't think it would happen. Masters of the Universe right now, in my stuck. Battlestar Galactica number 1 from Dynamite. Huh. I saw it, I saw the cover, I saw that it's the original cast from the 70s television series. Now this is post-Star Trek, the original series, post-Star Wars, when their, you know, networks were scrambling to kind of capitalize on the sci-fi craze. And there were dozens of movies and dozens of television shows. And Battlestar Galactica had a tiny bit of staying power, as special effects for the 70s were quite good. This is the original Battlestar Galactica, not the... The reboot from Sci-Fi, which I hear is excellent up until the final, like, six
That's
episodes.
What I hear too.
The artwork in here is, for a Battlestar Galactica book, saying, like, hey, let's go ahead and see if this works, you know? They manage. It's not great artwork, but the thing that they took very good care of was to capture the likeness of the actors who played those original roles.
I like that artwork.
Yeah, so it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. It's a nice little story. It's a nice way to kick it off. It's got me wanting more. So I'm going to say I'm stuck on Battlestar Galactica from number 1 from Dynamite. Also from Dynamite, I am sticking with The Shadow Year 1. I mentioned my problems with the Shadow books last month, and I'll just get to those in a minute. Building off your discussion from the industry news and crossovers, I actually, I don't know... To be honest, from Dynamite, I'm reading Masks, which is Green Hornet, Zorro, Shadow. I'm forgetting someone else here. The Spider. And there's a few others. The trouble with crossovers is that once you get beyond the thrill of seeing some of your favorite characters interacting with each other, which they normally won't, you have to have a reason for them to be together, and you have to have a reason for them to continue to interact with each other. And the trouble with crossovers is... It's built on, let's just get these people in a room and see what happens. And you guys said you should, one crossover year is enough. I think the old model was one giant crossover every, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
It's like every 2 years is too much, because then you don't get to settle into the quiet, long-form storytelling, which is what brings me back to comics month to month. Let's see this play out over 2 years, okay? We have that luxury with comic books, which is something you don't necessarily have with television shows, because if you're not showing the ratings, it doesn't matter. It's like, well, just stick with us, because at the end of next season, we're going to have this massive event that's going to change everything. And they're like, no, we need to know now.
Heck, stuff gets canceled within 2 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually put a little note on there, the trouble with crossovers, and I was glad you guys brought that up. After the first couple of issues, I remember I kept waiting for Zorro. He finally shows up. Now he's barely in this issue. I think it goes one more issue, so I might as well stick with it. The Rocketeer, Hollywood Horror. I'll be darned if this book, I'm sticking with it, and I may as well because it's done. It's a fun little book. I think I told you last week it's very, very cartoony in its animation,
mm-hmm.
almost like a Sunday morning newspaper cartoony. It was a nice little story. The banter between the characters was very rocketeerish, very smarmy and smart alecky. in a way, what you would expect from a Spider-Man to a large level degree. But I love the whole, you know, the it's a period piece also, much like The Shadow is. Sticking with Star Wars, the eponymously titled, well, self-titled Star Wars, it's the artwork in here, Carlos Danda, and the colorist, Elatib or something like that. I can't say, how do you say his name? The space stuff is pretty darn good. And it's nice, as I have mentioned since I started reading this book, to just be reading about Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Princess Leia and Darth Vader. And by the way, Darth Vader has been demoted in this, which is an interesting little sidebar of a storyline because of the destruction of the Death Star and his failure to prevent it. So he's been demoted, and now he answers to a few generals.
Which takes place between Star Wars and
Empire?
The Empire.
Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Sticking with The Massive. I've mentioned this in the last couple podcasts. I believe I'm all caught up now. I read 10, 11, and 12. Issue 11 is about great white sharks and a megalodon, so I loved every second of it. I didn't care that it seemed to be a bit out of the normal tone of the series. It's very interesting. It's a post-apocalyptic future, which several environmental disasters have occurred, basically shutting down the world's economy. It fell on a lot of people's number one list, and for good reason. I'm sticking with it. It's nothing that has nothing has shattered me yet. My pick of the month, since there was no Finding Gossamer, The Wake, number one by Scott Snyder. And Mr. Murphy,
awesome,
what's his first name? I can't remember his first name. Sean Murphy, right?
Yes.
Pop Punk Rock Jesus is what Sean Murphy's
famous
for.
Right.
Vertigo, number one, The Wake. Another post-apocalyptic, bringing my post-apocalyptic books, if you include Battlestar Galactica, up to four. No East of West this month. But this one, a deep rumbling from under the Antarctic Ocean, which is now believed to be organic, continues to occur. Wildlife from the area is fleeing, and they have to go in and figure out what it is. I thought this was very eerie. It picks up 200 years in the future, and then it backtracks all the way to present day, in which a marine biologist is recruited and then taken to a underground, or under ice, I should say, a laboratory to try and discover what the origin of this organic sound could possibly be coming deep within the Arctic. Sayonara to The Shadow. Basically because The Shadow Year One is much better. The Shadow Year One actually has a continuous creative team where The Shadow seems to alter every month. So, and it was okay. I've got the first 13 issues. I kind of like the idea of The Shadow Year One. I love the storyline that's going on. I don't want to give too much away because it just got going. I don't really have that much information. But we're going to say Sayonara to The Shadow, which is my first Sayonara since dumping all of my New 52.
Yeah,
it's
been a while.
That is my list as it stands right there, folks, as eclectic as it is.
And ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for us. We are panel scanners. Keep reading comics. The industry is booming. Sayonara.